Hello, and welcome to the next episode of the Maverick Way Radio Hour. After taking a little two and a half month hiatus, we're back on the line and really, really excited. Today we have Peter Iango, producer, director, writer, et cetera, all around magical man, and back with us with some new stuff. So welcome, Peter. How are you doing today?
Hey, what's up, Blaine? Always excited and happy to be on the show. I'm doing good. I feel good, doing good.
Awesome. Well, I just wanted to let everybody know that A, I want to thank you for the inspiration for us to get back on the road, because I've been thinking about it. It's like, all right, you know, I've been out producing like crazy lately, you know, crazy schedules and stuff and all over the place. And it was impossible to get a regular show going. And then I noticed on Facebook the other day that you had won, that you had attended the Philadelphia Independent Film Festival and won a bunch of awards. And I'm like, all right, this is the perfect opportunity. Let's get Peter back on. Let's see if we can get some of the people involved in the movie. And let's talk a little bit about this whole festival thing. So first off, you know, tell us what happened in Philly. I'm going to let you actually, I'm going to let you brag a little bit. So
Okay. Take it. You know me, I love bragging. The event that we were part of is actually, this is its first year, and it's called the Philadelphia Film Awards. And we were nominated. The film that I produced, Casanova Was a Woman, was nominated for 7 awards at the festival. It was nominated for Best Picture. It was nominated for Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress. Two of our supporting actresses were nominated. And we were also nominated. Our director was nominated. Our cinematographers were nominated. And the composer, who's going to join us tonight and speak, Tyler Weston, was nominated for his score. So naturally, when Jezebel Montero, who's my co-producer and the writer and lead actress behind this movie, contacted me to inform me that we were nominated for these 7 awards, I was behooved. I was extremely excited. And I drove down to Philly to join her. It was a really nice festival, Blaine. Like I said, it's in its first year. They were at this beautiful venue in Philadelphia. They put on a really great show. There was a lot of very, very talented independent filmmakers there. And I think that's the key to these events, is you want it to be an evening and an event where there's a lot of independent filmmakers doing really incredible work. So it was kind of a really nice event to network and meet different people, if you will. We had a blast, you know.
Cool.
And we wound up taking home 3 awards. The film won for Best Picture. So
yeah! It's a big one.
So, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, Jezebel Montero won for the Lead Actress Award. And one of our supporting actresses, Caroline Valentino, won for Best Supporting Actress.
Wow,
so
that's fantastic.
We did really well there. What else can I say, but we did really well there, you know? It was very exciting, Matt. We really had a blast there, put on a great event, and we were really super excited and very grateful to have won the awards that we did that evening. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So, all right, so let's take a step back. One of the things that I'm really curious about, because it's not something that I've ever done, describe what it was like, you know, what it felt like when you got the call from Jezebel to say, hey, we've got 7 nominations at a film festival. You know, what's that like? I mean, tell me about that whole thing, and then, you know, what's the energy like of being at a festival where you're a producer of a film that's got 7 nominations?
Well, it's pretty great. You know what it is? It's very gratifying because when you're making independent films, or I think when you're making films in general, you know, there's this sense of accomplishment, but at the same time, you know, you say to yourself, wow, you know, I really want people to enjoy the movie. I want it to be well received. You know, and when you're a producer or a writer or a director, you know, I think it's very important to you that people really receive the movie, especially because, to me, movies have to have a message. And Casanova Was a Woman, you know, has a message. You know, it's an LGBT film. It's, you know, it's a feminist-driven film. So there's a lot of very important and quality messages to get out of the movie. It also talks about stereotypes, you know, and ethnic stereotypes when it comes to people trying to get, you know, acting parts or filmmaking roles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So as a producer, I'm always sitting there saying, wow, you know, I really want the movie to do well. I want it to be received. I want people to really enjoy it. So when you get a phone call that the movie is nominated and has the potential of winning 7 awards in all these categories, music, cinematography, direction, you know, the film itself, the Best Picture Award, the actors and performers, you have to really pat yourself on the back and say, wow, you know, we really made an extraordinarily well-rounded, good film that
yeah.
people are really receiving. You know, they're receiving it from all of its layers, because that's what movies are. There's so many layers. And for people to nominate it in 7 categories, Blaine, then to me that's like, wow, people are receiving all the layers of this movie.
Yeah.
And it just makes me feel really good. It makes me feel like, you know, we made a great film, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so.
So before we get into my next, I've got a million questions for you. I do want to put it out there. If you're listening live and would like to call in, please feel free to do so. We've got some of the other people in the show that are going to be joining us here in a little while. But please call in. The call-in number is 646-564-9625. So call in, and you will be connected with our wonderful, lovely producer, Cameron Taddeo, who, Cameron, I don't know if you want to pipe in and just say hi before we get a little too off track, but it's Cameron's,
I
believe,
like
13th birthday today. So
it's 14th, actually. I'm a
yeah.
man now.
Oh,
yeah.
good. Because I
actually, Cameron took the road trip with me and came to the film festival. And fun factoid is Cameron was a random kind of fun extra in the background in the Casanova film. He has quite a funny
yeah.
moment in the
so,
beginning of the movie.
So really there should have been another category, you know, and you guys
yeah.
should have actually been
yeah.
nominated for 8, which is Best Random Extra Walk Through the Set Guy.
Yes. Yes,
and that would
yes.
have definitely
mm-hmm.
been a runaway for Cameron.
Yes, he would have
oh, yeah.
won
oh, yeah.
that.
I'll bring it home every time.
All right. Well, we're going to have to lobby for that with all the new film festivals for that, and then that can be Cameron's specialty. So anyway,
sure.
happy birthday, Cameron. Thank you for producing the show. Thank you for connecting me with Peter. Cameron is actually the one that has done some work with Peter on some films, not just this one, but some other ones, and now we're all working together and having a lot of fun. So anyway.
Yep.
All right, back to the show, and Cameron, again, happy birthday. He's really, really only 48 today.
that's right.
So,
you
know, I got to come clean. And especially, you know, since it's after 7 o'clock, I don't want anybody calling OSHA or whoever it would be to get me in trouble for using child labor after the prescribed times. So Peter, you mentioned that not only did you create a really well-rounded film and got awards for a number of different categories, not just acting,
mm-hmm.
but you also said that it's a film with a real message. So tell us, like, a real just short little piece, what's the film about? And from your point of view as one of the producers, tell us, like, if, you know, when we go see it, what should we look for, and maybe what should we, you know, what inside of us should we maybe be thinking about?
Sure. Well, you Casanova is a woman, definitely, like I said, has a strong message, or messages, I should say, and has a lot of layers to it. And what always gravitates me to making movies, besides money, I'm sorry, guys, I don't do it for free. But, no, in all seriousness, as a filmmaker, you know, when I was coming up and I was in college and I was learning film, I had a professor that constantly quoted the great, you know, Ingmar Bergman, and constantly quoted that you can't make a good movie without a message, whether you're producing it, writing it, or directing it. It's not worth it to you, and it's just not going to be a good movie. And that professor probably just instilled that in me. And moving forward in my professional career, I was always looking at scripts and people asking me to either direct them, write them, or produce them. And I always was saying to myself, okay, is the message there? You know, and this movie has that 100%. It's a female-driven movie, okay? And Jezebel is behind the movie in all of its aspects. She wrote it. She produced it with me. She starred in it. The movie is about, you know, a woman who is learning and discovering her sexuality later in life, her bisexuality, and learning that, you know, as a woman, I can do what I want. You know, I can achieve my dreams of being a successful actress. I don't have to label myself in love and sexuality. I can meet different people through my life, and I can fall in love with who I choose. It's really about choice. It's about, you know, I have a choice as a human being to do whatever I want, accomplish what I want, and be with whoever I want and love whoever I want. And what we see in the movie is that we have so many different obstacles as a society today. You know, she's Latin, and in the movie we see that by being Latin, she's stereotyped and she can't get certain parts. So there's that layer. Then there's the layer of, well, you have to be gay or straight. You can only be with a man or a woman. It's one or the other. Well, why can't I in my life have loved a man, married him, it didn't work out, but I loved him, but now I love a woman. You know, so why can't I have that choice? And as a woman, why can't I be successful in being an actress, in being a writer, in being a producer, a director, etc.? These are the subject matters that we approach in this movie, and we prove that you can. Everyone can do what they want, you know. Go out there and live your life. And I think that's why people respond to Casanova was a Woman, because that's the message that we're bringing across in this movie. And, you know, Blaine, we have won over 5 feature awards in the festival circuit, and we've been a part of a dozen film festivals. And some of those awards have been in film festivals that have recognized and awarded it for its LGBT message. So I think what we set out to do is there. It's very clear.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on all of that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, you know, I would actually like to thank you. I was actually pretty honored earlier this week when you got a hold of me and invited me to the premiere at the AMC Theater in Manhattan this coming week. And unfortunately, I'm back on the road next week, and I'll be producing an event in Toronto. But tell us what's going on next Tuesday.
Sure. So to kind of step away a little bit, I do, you know, we've talked about this in other shows. I have 2 other movies. I produced another feature film called Where Hearts Lie, starring Clifton Powell, Malik Gilbert, and Terrell Hicks. And then I also directed another feature film, directed and produced a feature film, another one, C Street, which had a slew of great celebrities in it, Dylan Walsh, Carrie Lowell, Michael Gross, Don Stark, Bruce Altman, etc. Tuesday, Where Heart Lies is having its red carpet premiere at the AMC Empire 25, which is a big cineplex that AMC has in Times Square in New York City. And we're having this red carpet event and premiere to launch and basically advertise that the movie is being released by a company called GVN Releasing this June. And it's going to be available for the public to rent and buy on DVD in retail stores, as well as on demand in all your different cable and satellite providers, as well as iTunes and Amazon, all of the digital platforms. So we're doing this event, Blaine, this event with the celebrities and the cast and crew at the AMC to basically kick off our release this month.
Cool. So you're a busy boy is what you're telling me.
Yep. Trying to stay busy. And then, I'm trying to stay busy. I don't, that's the right way to say it.
Well, you know, I know we've talked briefly about this in the past, but we're going to be starting to shoot some more episodes of the Maverick Way web series shortly. And I'm hoping that, and I know we've discussed this, that you'll be along with some of those shoots for us and help us direct some of our stuff, because I would love to get your magic in my show. And
I love it.
Awesome.
You know that.
Awesome.
I just want everybody to know too that if anyone is interested, that is involved in any of the films or part of the extended support team of any of them, you can go on WhereHeartsLieMovie.com and you can check out the AMC event next Tuesday. We're still selling tickets for that, but we've done a great job of selling a couple of hundred already. But if anybody's interested, even if you want to support the film, go to WhereHeartsLieMovie.com. And as far as Casanova, to see all the wonderful stuff that we've done, the awards, our trailer, and to stay up to date, we have our Facebook page dedicated to the film, Facebook.com/Casanova. That's with two S's, was a woman. Check that out as well, to kind of stay what's going on. But, Blaine, last time I talked to you, I wasn't able to really tell you a lot about distribution. I had to keep it quite secret.
Yeah, right. So let's briefly, before we start dialing up some of the other folks from Casanova, this is something that to me is alchemy. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I actually have, I'm ideally going to be shooting one of these episodes with someone who is creating her own completely new, not only creative, but distribution platform of her own called Seed and Spark. I suggest that everybody who's at all interested in any kind of independent film, check out seedandspark.com. Emily Best is her name, and she's amazing. She's just killing it. She's rocking the world out. But you have chosen to do a more traditional path to distribution. Is that correct?
Yeah, I absolutely. I mean, I would definitely describe it as that. I mean, we're not self-distributing. We're not really. None of the films are really financing and 100% self-distributing. We're working with, actual distribution companies that are helping us get the movies out there. So
how do you do that? How do you find distribution? How does that work? Is it an exclusive contract? You know, I always have an entrepreneurial business feel for my shows. So tell us a little about the business before we get back into talking about the movie.
Sure. Well, as far as the distribution, there's so much, we could have like a whole year's worth of shows on that, there's a lot that goes into it, because you have to think of it like releasing anything, like releasing any product. You know, there's the whole world out there. So there's domestic territories and there's foreign territories. And like any product, the rights exist for domestic and foreign properties. So you're basically licensing and giving these distribution companies the right and ability to take your product, your film, to the different territories that you negotiate with them. Now, sometimes some of your deals may reflect only a domestic distribution, which would just be the United States, and then you'll have to procure other, what they call sub-distributors, that would then put the movie out there in the different foreign territories. For instance, with my film C Street, the distribution company that we're working with for domestic release, just domestic release, is Gravitas Ventures. And Gravitas Ventures is going to be releasing C Street domestically on all of the on-demand and digital platforms. But that kind of frees us or puts us in a position where, okay, you know, now we have to procure foreign, you know, distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so interesting to me about distribution is you could get deals from all over the place. And it's not necessarily one person or one company that may release your movie everywhere. You may find yourself working with a variety of companies to get your movie in America, in Asian markets, in the Europe markets, you know, and the different territories that exist. So there's a lot that goes into it. And then, you know, you have the different platforms. You know, back in you know, the 80s and 90s, they called it home video because, you know, it was VHS, and it was really – it was broadcast, cable, and home video. Cable companies like HBO and Showtime would buy your movie to show it. You had broadcast, which was like the broadcast channels if they wanted to show your movie, and then you had home video. And then you had some other avenues that were like airplane, you know, putting it on an airplane, putting it in college campuses, places like that, libraries. Today, that's broadened quite tremendously.
Right. Well, you've got, you know, Netflix and
right.
Amazon Prime and, you know, all these other online distribution avenues.
So, absolutely. So now, like, when you say, hey, we got, you know, we got kind of this home video distribution, you could be talking about a terminology that umbrellas having your movie to be purchased and rented on Amazon, iTunes, have it on Netflix Stream, you know, have it, you know, and there's a lot of purchasing opportunities. Video game systems like PlayStation and Xbox are now renting and selling movies digitally on their stores, the Xbox store, the PlayStation store. You have Vudu with VUDU, which is selling movies on demand. You now have all the satellite and cable companies, Comcast, IO, Time Warner, DirecTV, they're renting and selling movies digitally via on demand. So now there's a wider gamut. It's not just, hey, you know, we're going to be on DVD and Walmart. You know what I mean? It's all of these digital platforms. So when I talk about distribution, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about all of those platforms that now exist and going to those. You know, those are the different things that we are putting these films in, you know. So there's so many different places that people are going to be able to check out the movie and rent it and buy it. And then theater's its own ballgame. You know, there's so much that goes into that, you know, releasing it in theater. C Street is one of the few films out of my three films that we're working on having a limited theater run, which we're very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping for a couple, you know, for a variety of cities, and we're hoping to run it in a limited theater capacity, in addition to the whole, you know, digital home video release that it's getting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and well, we're working right now on a release for Casanova. We're working on one. Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to do an entire episode just connected to C Street because it's a political comedy. And, you know, I really would love to compare your political comedy with the one that's happening in the United States right now under the guise of Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, all that good stuff. But we'll save that for another time. I think that'll be really fun. Besides, I want to see what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks before we do that.
A lot.
there's a lot going on. And it's just getting wackier and wackier. Anyway, I have a huge question. Now, we're talking about distribution and all that stuff. As a producer, writer, director, you know, when you're really putting a lot of your own talent, sweat equity, and all of that into a movie, how do you actually make money? Because I know you're not getting rich, you know, just producing and directing the films, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, there's the hope that one day, as the budgets increase and the films increase, hopefully, you know, the salaries will increase, you know, as the budgets go up, the movies go up, you know, but it's a collection, Blaine, of you make the movie, you set a salary that's fair for you and for the budget, and, you know, that's your kind of upfront compensation. And then, you know, as a producer and director and you know, if you're a writer, you're involved, you know, you're a part of this movie. So imagine it like creating a company, you know, an entity, and it's like, okay, you know, I'm a part of this entity, you know, and I have a stake in it, you know, it's almost like owning shares, mm-hmm. in it, you know? So
well,
it's like,
now,
is this
the kind of thing where you get points? Is that how that's done? Okay.
Right.
So what are points, and how do you get paid for your points if the movie does actually start making money?
Well, what happens is that you own percentage always in the net profit of the movie, never in the net gross. So for anybody that doesn't understand those concepts, the net gross is the money that is earned and matriculated from the movie's distribution right up front.
Mm-hmm. And 1 point is 1% ownership generally?
Yes, basically, but it's off the profit, not the gross. And I think this is where a lot of filmmakers, young filmmakers and indie filmmakers, get confused, because when you're talking about the economic terminology of gross, it's money earned before anything is deducted from it. Any negative costs are deducted from it. Taxes,
mm-hmm.
Which we all have to make taxes. And then negative cost is how much money was put into the movie and how much expenses the distributor and code. So to give you a quick example, let's say me and you made a movie and we put it out and we distributed it.
Let's do that. Awesome.
Do that.
Right
and
here. It's been created. We're going to do a movie.
So, let's say the distribution company, we split it 50-50, right? So let's say our first revenue comes in and it's $1 million. It's making a nice round number. So $1 million. Now, immediately, that gross has to be split in half because they have to get their 50-50. So now that $1 million has very quickly turned into $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not done with that yet, okay? The distributor, as well as us, have to acknowledge what were the costs that went into putting the movie out, marketing, publicity, any cost in creating the DVDs and materials, all of that has to be deducted, okay? And you'll eventually be left with a number that you can say, okay, this is our net profit. You make money on the net profit. So me as a producer, when finally they get down to the deductions that creates net profit,
oops. Looks like we lost Peter there. Peter, I'm sure, will be calling back in. Ironically, right as we're talking about making net profits on the film. There we go. All right.
I
so you
that.
Were.
Well,
yeah, well, you know,
it's welcome
to technology.
I know. The way I'll end it is, so let's say we wound up with $400,000 in profit out of our original million. That's your net profit. So as a producer and director, the percentage that they gave you, then you're making the money off of that. So
okay.
If they gave me 2%, 5%, you know, 2 or 5% of that, you know, so it takes some accounting and some understanding of the investment that was put in the economics, but there's definitely opportunity to make money if
mm-hmm.
your film makes money. You know,
yeah. Well,
film.
You know, and I've also heard, and I think this is something really that's very important for everybody to understand, especially, you know, young filmmakers, independent folks, is that you mentioned the accounting, and, you know, there's all sorts of these terrible horror stories about people taking advantage, you know, getting, doing work for points, and then through some accounting shenanigans, finding out that all sorts of expenses are lumped into the expenses of the film that you may not have known about, and all of a sudden somebody's making money somewhere, but you're not, for your work, for your creative work.
Well, that's the thing, you know, because studios, distributors, can be quite creative, okay, and creative and devious with their negative cost. And that means, hey, every time you see profit, we spent X amount of dollars, so we're going to absorb all this money, and that means that you're not getting all this money. And that's what you need to be careful about, because when you sign these deals and you work with these distributors, you want to be able, as a producer, whether you're by yourself or working with other producers, you want to be able to have a very healthy and intellectual conversation with any studio that you give your movie to with, hey, you need to have, you know, we need to have realistic goals and capitalization on how much money you can put in the movie before we see money if it makes profit. You got to think ahead. You got to be intelligent.
Well, and right. And you've got to, you've got to know what you know, and you actually have to have a pretty good handle on what you don't know. So if I know an awful lot of artistic people don't, you know, aren't either concerned with or don't understand the accounting stuff like that. But we definitely, you know, then you got to find somebody to be your advocate, you know, to keep an eye on things for you.
Yeah, you want to, I think, team up with somebody that knows what they're doing or has past experience that can guide you and kind of help you when you get to these stages to give you some inspiration on, hey, listen, these are the things we should ask for. I've been through this rodeo, and these are the things we want to watch out for. You know, and, you know, that's why I think when you're making independent films, you got to build a team, you know, and mm-hmm. it's got to be full of people that have experience.
Yep.
Absolutely. So.
Cool. Well, we just had Tyler call in. Tyler is the audio engineer and composer for Casanova Was a Woman and one of the winners. So let's get Tyler in here. And let's hear a little bit about Tyler, because here's another thing, too, that you know, a lot of us don't really think about the background stuff. You know, I mean, I have a theater background, and I remember I actually started out in theater. Well, after my very short-lived acting career bit the dust, I immediately went into lighting and sound design for theater, and it was awesome. But I always considered that to be kind of the mood element, you know, and it's the kind of thing that you don't really think about. You know, if it's not like some superhero thing and there's all sorts of explosions and stuff, you don't really think about how important the background, the foundation that is built by something like the music and stuff. So, Tyler, welcome to the Maverick Way Radio Hour. Say hi and introduce yourself, man.
Hi, I'm Tyler Weston. Thanks for having me and glad to be on the show.
Well, we're really happy and honored to have you, you award-winning composer, you.
Nominated. Not quite.
Nominated. How you doing, Tyler?
I'm doing good.
So, Tyler, where are you? Where are you calling in from?
Hollywood, California. I live and
Fantastic.
Work in Hollywood.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So, actually, we were talking about I'm going to be shooting some episodes of my web series, The Maverick Way, and ideally we're going to be in Southern California sometime in the next couple months. So I'd love to meet you and connect with you in person sometime. So,
absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about your background. How did you fall in love with audio, and what made you make this crazy decision to decide to do music, sound, background sound for movies? I mean,
sure. So I started playing music kind of a little late. I started when I was about 15, which is somewhat late for a musician, but started playing in rock bands and played guitar and noisy, angry kids making horrible music, and then kind of continued to do that for several years, despite, you know, my parents. But they were very supportive, which was great. And so then I went to college, and after, you know, playing in bands for a couple of years, and I realized all of a sudden when I got there, I could study music, which I didn't really ever consider doing. So I got to college, and I signed up as a music major my second week, and just sort of dove in and didn't really know what I was getting myself into. But I ended up studying theory and composition and orchestration and history of all music, and I was playing in a couple bands at the time, and I was started writing music for films, for short films that were on campus. You know, there was a film department at my school. I went to Occidental College, which is also in Los Angeles, and there was a film department, and started getting involved with that and scoring short films. And then I got an internship, and I started working for a composer after college, and I just kind of never stopped.
Cool. Good for you. Yeah. Tyler, we're having, of course, the sound guy. It sounds like we're getting some noise on your line. Do you mind dropping and calling right back in?
Yeah, of course.
All right, cool. Thanks. So so while Tyler calls back in, I'm hoping that's where that crinkling sound was coming from. Peter, tell us a little bit. Tell us a little bit about what it was like to work with Tyler and, you know, how you found him. How did you guys actually come across Tyler, and how did you decide to add him to the project?
Well, Jezebel kind of, you know, approached me and said, you know, I want to do, you know, a new score to the movie, because we had some different music in the movie when we first finished the cut and we were first touring festivals about, you know, over a year ago. And, you know, fast forward now, she said, you know, I really want to have a completely original score scored for the movie for distribution. I said, of course, you know, let's do it. You know, so, you know, we put out ads and, you know, in various different production sites, and Jezebel kind of filtered through a lot of them and then sent me one that she really enjoyed. And I listened to their samples, and we just loved Tyler's samples and loved what he sent in. And
cool.
We felt he was the right guy. So Jezebel grabbed him, and, you know, the rest is history.
Nice. Tyler, are you back with us?
I am. Thanks, Peter.
Oh, way better. Thank you for calling. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
So
Tyler, your stuff was great. Your samples were fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
So Tyler, tell me the same story from your point of view.
Sure.
So Jezebel gives you a call.
Slightly different. I was kind of, you know, Peter mentioned that they had put up some posts online and on various professional, you know, job posting sites. And I found it and I applied, as I do, you know, I send out 10 a day or something like that. And I went visit my parents for Thanksgiving, and then didn't really hear back. And I'm screwing the story up. I did the demo. She wrote back and said, hey, we like your website. Can you score a scene? And so I did. I scored a scene, and I sent it to him. You know, this is what I would do with your movie, basically. And there was some temp music that they had cut in, but I took the scene and I said, this is how I would do it. And I sent it to him, and then I kind of went on a little mini vacation for Thanksgiving, and I heard back from them, and they liked it, and it was okay. I got to get home and I got to start work, because we've got a month to do all the music. So it was very, very, let's go. Let's get it done, and jumped right on board.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic, man. So tell us a little bit about the process. What was, you know, I so desperately want to ask you, what was it like working for Peter, and then mute his line and let you tell us all sorts of horrible stories. but anyway, what was it like, you know, so you get this, what's your process? How do you actually go about making something like this happen?
Well, first you freak out because you've got
that cold sweat is like, oh shit, now I got to actually do this.
Yeah. Cause on this project, we, you know, Peter was talking about distribution earlier, and if I remember correctly, in order to get distribution, you have to give it to someone that's going to kind of, Peter can explain this way better, but you have to give it to someone who can then go and shop it around, and they're not going to take it if they're not going to take it if you don't have the rights to all the music. So they wanted it by a certain date, and we had to get it to them by that date. So I'm looking at this, and I'm going, I've got 5 weeks to do.
Oh, my God.
I think the total was about 60 minutes of music, roughly.
Holy crap, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't write it all myself, but I had to be in charge of it all, and I had to find it all and get it all. So I started, the first thing I did was very boringly, I made a list and went, oh boy. And then I started calling a couple people that I know that could maybe help me out just on certain things, because I don't know how much of the music you've heard, but a lot of it is, you know, traditional Hollywood score. And then there's some dance scenes and there's some club scenes, but we had to get music for all that. And we had to write some songs. So I collaborated with a couple friends of mine to write some songs and to create some dance tracks. And you know what? I just started. And Jezebel would call me every couple of days and say, hey, you got more music for me? And I'd say, yeah, I think so. And I'd send it off to her, and she would say, it needs to sound more Cuban. And so I'd go back to the drawing board.
Ah, cool.
Right. You know, I'd go, I'm about as ethnically uninteresting as it gets. And so all right, okay, how do I sound more Cuban? So I did some research, and, you know, I banged my head against the drawing board. And you just, when you're under a deadline like that, you just have to literally work every day, even if what you produce isn't good, because then mm-hmm. you get the bad stuff out of the way, and then the next day you'll write something good.
Well, that's definitely part of the artistic process, too, and I think it's something that everybody misses. And I love how you just put it. You've got to get the bad stuff out of the way to get to the good stuff. And,
yeah.
I mean, that's just part of the creative process, you know? You just got to do it.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, we. Sometimes
go ahead, Peter.
Sometimes you go, what Tyler was alluding to is that sometimes, you know, if distribution hasn't, you know, come your way, you will go to, and this is a popular thing to do, you will go to sales agencies, and their job is to sell your movie all throughout the world, you know? And, we had interest from a really well-respected sales agency, Magwell Entertainment, out in California. And they wanted the film, and they wanted to work on getting it out there in foreign distribution and getting it going. And that's what had happened when we, you know, settled on Tyler. We were like, okay, you know, here's our deadline to get them the movie. And so when you distribute, there's something called chain of title, which is really just, hey, you got to prove to us that, you know, everything in this movie is A-OK. You know, you own the rights to it. People sign away to be in it. You know, there's nothing, as we say in Italian, nothing fugazi about it. It's all in the up and up. And
all right. So as a Norwegian from Minnesota, you got to tell me what that means.
It's just an Italian kind of expression of, like, you know, be on the up and up, you know.
Got it.
And that's what happens with distribution chain of title. So naturally the sales agency needs to know that you can produce these things. You can procure these things as the producers of the movie, as
Got
the
it.
Quote-unquote studio. So that's why poor Tyler had 5 weeks. So, you know, but you did a great job, Tyler. So.
Oh, thank
yeah,
you.
So Tyler, tell us, you know, what was your favorite part of making this movie? You know, is it a favorite thing that you composed? Is it something in the process? What did you really super enjoy about it?
That's a great question. I'd say there's three things that were really, really great about this project. One of them was working with Jezebel. She's amazing. We were on the phone every couple days, FaceTiming. She's on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. So I'd work late, and then I'd get a call from her at 9 a.m. my time, and I'm barely waking up, and go, I got some more music from you. So we were in, like, constant communication, and she was great, and she was creative, and she had great ideas, and she really pushed me to do the best I could. So that was fantastic. The other thing I really enjoyed was the actual mixing process, which is something that's not talked a lot about, but when there's basically, in a film, there's basically two mixes. And for the music side, you write all the music and you go, great, I've written all these notes. And I've sent them to the producers and director, and they're happy and all the notes are approved. And then you've got to get someone, or hopefully you're able to get someone to make them sound even better. Best the notes, you know, make it sound the best that the notes possibly can. And I have a great friend, his name's Phil McGowan. He's an amazing music mixer. And so I bribed him with a bottle of scotch, and we went over to his place, and for about 2 days we mixed the entire score, and really he brought it to life and did a great job. And so that was fantastic. So those were the two highlights.
Nice. That must have been a good bottle of scotch to get 2 days of work out of somebody.
Well, we're good friends, and I use him on everything. He's
awesome.
My guy. Yeah, I use him on everything, and we've known each other for years.
So
I could also relax at that point because all the music was done.
Yes. So were you also involved in taking the audio recordings from the actual shooting and mixing that together with what you composed, or is that somebody else?
No. That's actually someone else, and that's what I meant by the second mix. So once we were done with our mix, my mix, how I wanted the music to sound and the best I could possibly make it sound with the, you know, with what I had, then we give it to someone else, and I'm blanking on his name. I apologize if you're listening, but he's great, and he takes all the music and all the sound effects and all the dialogue and mixes them in to picture as a coherent final product. And that's what the audience hears, and that's what you hear, and that's what the world hears. So it's a little bit of a technical process, but it's also very creative, and and he did a great job as well.
Yeah, that sounds super fun.
Yep. Yeah.
So how we've got a whole bunch of new people on. We've got Carolyn Valentino, who is an actress, and I believe she was one of the winners of one of the other awards. So let's get her live.
She won Best Supporting Actress for the film.
Awesome. Carolyn, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Rocking and rolling.
Congratulations on your honor last week.
I'm so excited.
That is so fantastic.
I really appreciate that, my friend.
That's really cool. We also have Jezebel, who just came in, and we've been saying all sorts of nice, really, really nice things about her so far. Jezebel, welcome to the Maverick Way Radio Hour. Seriously, these guys have said really good things about you, so now it's your turn to trash them.
Well, you know, I have them well trained. That's what I do. That's how I train them.
Excellent.
No, thank you for having me on the show. I'm very excited. I was hearing a little bit of Tyler, and I just heard Carolyn. You didn't tell me it was going to be a party. You might as well just start pouring the champagne.
I know. Virtual champagne for everybody. So, well, congratulations, because, seven nominations is huge, but then to take home some of those awards, especially the big one, is amazing. So
thank you. We're very excited, and we're very proud of everyone, you know, because that feature to me is everyone's award, you know, because it means, you know, people liked the production design, people liked the music, people liked the sound, you know, people liked everything besides, you know, the acting, the writing, the directing, you know. So I'm very proud of the best feature award. It's great. It's for everyone.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us today. It's really an honor to have you.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your background, and, you know, how did you decide to throw your life away and become a movie producer?
Yeah, I know. Well, I was on the ledge thinking about it, and right about to jump. And then I decided to be a movie producer right after I decided to jump. Now, you know, the thing is that I started off as an actor, you know, like most of us do. And I actually did pretty well as an actor. I was a child actor. And then,
stay on long. Thank you.
Okay. And then, okay. Hey, Margo.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I didn't know you were there, too.
I'm on the street in the middle of a lot of noise, but I thought it was so cool of you guys to want to talk to us, so I just called in for a minute.
Oh, okay. Okay, great, great, great. Well, anyway, make a long story even longer. You know, I segued into writing and producing and directing when, you know, I reached the age of 35 and I saw the roles for women and the positions for women in the industry lighten. Like, really, the load was really lightening. So I said, you know, I always wrote a little bit because I did sketch comedy. I did a lot of improv and, you know, so I always wrote. So, you know, I just decided, okay, I should start writing. So I started in 2007, I started my own film company and, I wrote Blonde, Latin, Two, and then that won a couple of, it was a documentary, a tongue-in-cheek documentary on Latinos in the industry looking a certain way. And then that did really, really well. And then I did a short called The Basement. And then, I just, Mark, are you interrupting my conversation?
Hey, gang, you know what? I love you all. You're fabulous. You want to promote us? I got to go. I can't even talk.
What is going on with Margo, Jezebel? What was that?
I have no idea.
We've just been Blog Talk Radio bombed. That was awesome.
That was great.
So, Carolyn, do we still have you on?
Yeah, me?
Awesome. Cool. So I want you guys to just talk a little bit. I'm going to step out.
But Matt, did you hear everything I said? Were you able to hear everything I said? Was I on?
Yes, you were. I actually lost your name on my feed here. So you were still on. I just didn't see you. So, no, that's great.
Oh, okay.
No, you were still there, Jezebel. Jezebel,
all right,
go ahead.
Then
finish what you were saying. You won the awards for your past film,
and then you know, like the universe was kind of telling me, oh, okay, now you got to do a feature because you did a short narrative, you did a short doc, okay, you know, it's going well, and then you got to do a feature. So I wrote the feature, developed it for a very, very long time. I've been working on this for like 8 years, trying to raise the money, trying to develop a really good script, and then I finally, in 2014, after about 6 years, got the money, some investors, some private investors, people lending me money, basically. I mean, that's how you do it, some credit cards, some of my own money. And then we did it. I hired an amazing producer, Peter Iango, a great director, Kevin Arboy. We, the three of us, got an amazing cast and crew together, 4 months of pre-production, 2 weeks, 14 days, I don't know if you told them, Peter, 14 days of, you know, shooting 91 scenes in 14 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's crazy. So then, and then that's it, and the rest is history. I mean, we did a crowdfunding campaign, which was very successful. We were able to raise more money for post. I did another little fundraiser, screening the movie. I raised some money there. And then, the rest is history. Last year we were in like 13 festivals. We've won altogether 9 awards.
Wow.
6 for best feature. It's going great. We've got lots of interest in lots of different avenues, but I can't talk about it until I sign on the dotted line. So, but we've got interest in the movie, which is great.
Cool. So what about this movie was it, or what about this subject matter that interested you? You know, what inspired you to actually write the script?
Well, here's the thing. I consider myself part of the LGBT community, bisexual, and I didn't see enough stories that were really dealing with bisexuality. You know, there's this community out there, LGBT, and I didn't really feel, and, you know, I say this publicly, I didn't really feel it was inclusive. The very community that is supposed to be including someone like me doesn't really include us in the storytelling, in the artist and the storytelling of, you know, filmmaking. It's either gay or lesbian or even transgender, but it's never, you know, real bisexuality. Like, what comes with that? How do you live when you're attracted to both sexes? How are you monogamous? You know, because people, the implication with being bisexual is that you're not monogamous. So that's what the movie deals with. The movie really deals with monogamy. And, you know, having a relationship regardless of what gender you're attracted to, regardless of anything. It really is about monogamy and commitment. And in the form of a romantic comedy, I also deal with wanted to write about stereotypes, you know, different kinds, like ethnic ones. Because, you know, I'm Cuban, but I'm blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and, you know, nobody ever expects me to speak Spanish, and that brings in a whole dynamic with the public, with my career, that is very interesting, in my opinion. So I bring up those things in the movie, you know, stereotypes, and why we put people in this box, and what that does to a person and their identity. So I just want, and I always write comedy, so I wanted to put it, wrap it up in a comic bow. So yeah, that's why it's basically autobiographical, but you know, I embellish a lot, and I would say 50% of it is true and 50% of it is embellished, you know, so it's definitely fiction.
Got it. Well, I really want to thank you for something that for the way you said it, which is a huge pet peeve of mine, is, and I think it's one of the things that leads to an awful lot of the confusion around this subject matter, is you're very clearly speaking of it as gender, not sex. And it drives me crazy. I see it in the New York Times where people are using the word sex for gender. And it's not correct.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yes. You know, and I don't know. I don't even really have a question around that, but it's just something that I think is really important. The words we speak, how we say them, and what we say is very important.
That's right.
And
well, attraction is different, too, from your, you know, sexuality and attraction is different from, you know, identifying as a specific gender. You know what I'm saying? That's what you're saying, you know, that you got to be careful what you use as far as, you know, when you're using gender, sex and sexuality, they can be three different things, and one can have nothing to do with the other, you know, or
exactly.
They can have everything to do, or they can overlap, you know.
Which
so
is,
you do. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, which is one of those thoroughly ludicrous things about these ridiculous bathroom laws that people are going.
Oh my god!
You know,
god,
it's
please.
It's like I identify with this gender, but that doesn't mean I'm a pervert, or
that's
it doesn't
right.
mean you know that it's completely separated from my sexual attraction, the
that's
attraction
right.
I might have for someone, or you know,
that's
and
you'd
anyway,
you'd be surprised, Matt, well, how many people, you know, confuse those things. Like they think that if you, for whatever reason, you're either, you know, in my case, I'm a woman and I'm bisexual. Like if you're bisexual, then somehow you have some kind of masculine quality. You know, like, and you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, okay, so who's the male in your relationship when you're with a woman? And it's like, one thing has nothing to do with them. I'm always a woman and I'm always a female. You know what I mean? It's like people confuse the gender and how you identify with your gender and what you're attracted to. They're two completely different things. And
yeah.
We do deal with that in the movie. In the movie, we really are talking about sexuality with regards to attraction. That's really
yes.
what we're talking about.
Beautifully put. Thank you so much. Well,
thank you.
I don't want to ignore Carol Ann. You're
oh,
still
sorry,
here.
Go
you,
for it.
We still got you, right?
Oh yes, I'm here.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, so I want you. We're going to run over today. Usually, it's the Maverick Way Radio Hour, and this is so much fun to have you guys on. We're just going to let this go for a few more minutes, as long as I can still have you guys available. But tell us a story, Carol Ann, about like. The craziest time on set. I mean, what did you say, Jezebel? 91 scenes in 14 days? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
So
yep.
Caroline, tell us something that was just crazy.
tell Caroline, tell them about the airport, man. That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to talk about security? Not so much. I mean, here we are filming in the airport. We got people scouting around the corner with big bags hidden behind their backs, and I got a hidden microphone underneath my shirt, and we keep going back and forth in the same spot over and over again for 3 hours, and you would think somebody would notice.
Well, we stole the scenes. You know, we stole the scenes. It was guerrilla style because we didn't have enough money to rent the airport. So that's what we had to sneak all these scenes in, and that's what Caroline is talking about. It was that day was insane. Caroline, I don't know about
hey.
You, but I thought it was insane.
How's it going?
Wow.
Yeah, no.
So Caroline, what was going through your mind?
I was actually laughing, thinking this is actually part of the fun of doing this kind of work. Like, it's never what you think it's going to be, and you got to roll with the punches. And to me, it's hilarious to have to borrow somebody's boat that, like they did, and you're supposed to be shooting in Miami, and it's 20 degrees outside, and they're naked shooting on a yacht that looks like it was a $20 million rental. I mean, to me, that's hysterical. You got to do what you got to do. You got to make it happen. You can't bitch about it. You just got to make it happen.
You know, and that's the thing we had about, like, people like Carolyn and most of the actors that were involved in this. They were such troopers. They were soldiers, man. They were like, they didn't hear what was happening, how hard it was, as long as the scene got done. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that airport, it was the whole entire day, and we had to be careful that we wouldn't get thrown out. We had to finish these scenes.
Blaine, we were at John F. Kennedy without any formal permission or permit. 100% guerrilla style, as they would put it.
Love it.
Okay. And, you know, I mean, it's JFK post 9/11. So do I need to say more? Here we are, you know, trying to guerrilla this scene. You know, so it was definitely interesting. Our sound guy, who's a good friend of mine.
It was three scenes. So imagine how hard it was. Three different locations in the airport.
Well, yeah. And the sound guy that we had, was a good friend of mine who actually worked on the sound on C Street and Where Hearts Lie. I just remember he was, we put all of his gear in a knapsack in a typical backpack. And one of our PAs helping for the day, Ashley Mandelhorn, like, she was wearing this backpack. And it was like, you know, and he was walking behind, tweaking things in the backpack, trying to pretend like he was just taking things out of his backpack.
Oh, my
and,
God,
you know,
that's awesome.
There was giant bullets of sweat around his head. He thought we were going to, like, go to prison forever for it.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, and Carolyn said the boat scene. She wasn't in that boat scene in particular, but we did a boat scene. And like she said, that day was April, and it was 2 years ago, so it was April 2014, and that was the year that the spring was, like, freezing. So it was 32 degrees, and we were all, like, in bathing suits and shorts, just freezing to death. And we did the scene, and it looks like it's breezy and sunny and beautiful. I mean, it was hilarious.
That's great. So I'm going to ask you guys a question, and I want any of you to jump in at any one point. This is kind of – my show, as you know, has very – sort of – I'm not really an arts – well, I'm an arts show because, you know, I have a background in that. But I love the idea – I've got a very entrepreneurial bent about this, and that's one of the things I love about you guys, because you guys just made it happen. But I always ask this question, you know, was there any one point during this whole process that any of you really were terrified that it really wasn't going to happen?
Oh, my God, that happens with every movie that I'm attached to. I go through those moments a lot, but I'll let Jezebel give her moment. I'll give my moment if Jezebel has a moment.
And then Carolyn. You know what? I was so driven, and I have been working on it for so long that, no, that never entered my mind. I was like, this has got to get done no matter what. I am going to be homeless, and this will get done. So it didn't matter where the money was coming from, how much I was going to go broke, how much I had to put on my credit card, how many other jobs I had to do and fulfill to be able to get the money to do this, how annoying I was going to be to people to try to pull favors. It just had to get done. So
she was annoying,
right? Yeah, totally.
Sometimes that comes with somebody that has a real purpose and is truly dedicated to make something happen.
Yeah,
if I can jump in on that, I never, ever, ever lost the vision of this because I was fortunate enough to be in the stage version of the very first draft of this. And the idea was that, you know, stage version morphs into a film. And years later, here we are making a film. So, you know, to be a witness and be a part of this whole process and the power of holding your intention on something and no matter what, that happening. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt, knowing Jezebel, that this bad boy was going to go up and be distributed.
That's sweet. Yeah,
fine.
No,
so
I mean,
then,
we,
so
I,
am I the only realist here? No, I'm kidding.
No, you know, it's, no. No, that's okay.
Yeah.
I totally get it, you know, I totally get that. But since the thing is, Carol Ann and I, you know, Peter came on board in 2014. Like Carol Ann said, we had done a staged reading. I did a live reading of the screenplay of the 9. So, you know, she had been part of this baby, you know, that we were like nurturing and flowering since the very beginning. So she kind of knew that once we got funding, it was going to get done, you know. It was just a matter of getting the right moment and the right funding and the right casting crew. And we did. You know, I mean, we had a perfect casting crew. I mean, you know, there's always obstacles and there's always things you need to deal with on a daily basis. But generally speaking, everyone was committed and everyone knew what they had to do that day. And everyone, you know, they knew that it was low budget. They knew the situation. So they put 200% every day. I couldn't have been prouder of everyone.
Well,
and I'm very lucky to have worked with everyone.
You know, Blaine, if I may, because you're, you know, I asked the question if I...
Wait, your name is Blaine? I've been calling you Matt for like half an hour. This is ridiculous.
I know. It's actually a lot of fun.
I didn't even notice. I thought you were talking to somebody else who had called in that I didn't realize.
No.
You can call me whatever you'd like.
That's hilarious. You didn't even notice. Oh, my God. You're killing me.
I won't say Castanova.
Oh, we got some weird modulation. Is that you, Peter?
Can you hear me or no?
I can hear you, but you're modulated.
I don't know why.
There we go. Now you're better.
There you go. What I could say is that just in general, you know, making movies, whether it be this movie or really any of the movies that I've been a part of, you know, making these independent type of movies and not having the backing, if you will, of these exuberant budgets, and then a studio and kind of doing it yourself independently. Throughout the process, I think there's obvious moments where, you know, things happen because obviously you go into this and you know things are going to happen. You know that as much due diligence as you put in, as much effort as you put in, as much planning, something's still going to go awry. Something's still going to happen.
Of course.
There's those moments, whether you're directing or you're producing, where I think everybody hits a stagnant. Something happens. You know, maybe it happens on set. Maybe it happens in pre-production. Maybe it happens in post-production. Something generally happens, and you try to avoid it like the plague, but it still happens. And sure, you know, you have moments where it's like, wow, you know, like, you know, are we going to bounce back from this? And at the beginning, I think sometimes you don't always have the answer to that. You know, sometimes you don't know exactly how you're going to overcome a particular problem. But obviously with time, with perseverance, and with dedication, you figure out how to come over it. But I think it's obvious that any producer or director, you know, making indie movies, probably even making large, you know, studio movies, for lack of a better word, shit happens. You know, and
of course.
You know, and sometimes this shit affects you, you know, and you're a little, you know, I don't know, you know, you're a little taken back by it. But
hey,
the thing, though, but maybe it's because of my background and maybe Carol Ann's too. And Peter, you don't have the background that I have, you know, in the sense that as an actress, too, in improv and a theater actor, you know, I mean, you'd be surprised how much crap happens live on stage. Like, I mean, a beam can fall down on you. I mean, the lights don't come on. I mean, all these things happen live. And you got to be able to roll with the punches, maintain composure, stay in character. And, you know, I think that helps me as producer in regards to what Peter's talking about. Like, no, I never, you know, I never got frazzled. I never got that, even though Peter and Kevin did an amazing job of keeping me, you know, keeping stuff like that at bay because I was acting, you know. They did a great job of that. But I knew everything that was going on the next day. You know, I knew what happened the day before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but I think my background, believe it or not, in theater, it's like anything that happens. It's not a good day if something crazy doesn't happen.
Yeah. that's always my favorite time. You know, when I'm doing anything in theater, that's one of the reasons I love live theater so much.
Yeah.
And the beauty of that is when things don't go the way they're planned, that's when you actually really get some interesting, fun stuff out of a script.
That's right.
It's a blast.
Sure.
Tyler, did you pipe in? Did you have something to say?
Oh,
you still with us?
You guys pretty much covered it. But I mean, I was just going to add that, you know, I've worked on a lot of really big studio films, and that stuff happens all the time anyway. It's just for different reasons.
Right.
I mean, I've worked on films where all of a sudden we find out there's another film coming out and it's exactly the same premise, like Ants and Bugs Life. I didn't work on those, but similar concept. And you got to beat them to the punch so they move up the deadline by 6 months.
Oh my God.
You know, that stuff. That's just filmmaking. And, you know, the people that do it, they're the professionals and they're the ones that make it, like, you know, everyone on this call. And that's what you have to
cool.
fun and part of the panic.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. Well, guys,
I've
taken a little bit too much of your time. We're running a little bit over. Jezebel, you got something else to say? Let's see if we can wrap this thing. And I know you all have stuff to go. And I think Jezebel, you actually had a function tonight or something, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually missing one of my friend's show right now. I got to go back in. I came out during intermission. I've just been missing. It's gonna kill me. So I'm going back in. I was gonna say thank you so much for having us on the show, Bling, and I really appreciate you helping us spread the word. I appreciate it. Thank you. Support indie filmmaking. It's really important. And try to catch it whenever you see it, wherever and whenever you see it, okay?
Yep. Well, thank you so much. You were so much fun to chat with tonight. So,
and tell people to follow us on the Facebook page, Casanova with a Woman Facebook page.
Absolutely. We'll make sure that we get this episode posted once we get it posted as a podcast.
Yep. All right. Thank you, guys. And bye, Tyler, Carolyn, and Peter.
All right.
Bye, guys.
So I'm gonna let you all kind of have a last word and anything you want to tell the Maverick Way audience. Tyler, why don't you start? And thanks for joining us. Thanks for giving us a little bit of insight into your particular craft and how composing comes about. But
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an amazing film. If you get a chance to watch it, it's fantastic. It's funny. It's dramatic. Everyone's great in it. And you can hear all the music on my website, which is just westonmusic.com. And you can check out all the music. And if that's what you're interested in, it's all up on my site.
And can you spell your last name for us?
Sure. It's Westen.
E-N. So westonmusic.com.
Yep, that's my website. And there's a whole section for Casanova, and you can hear all of it.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, man. It's really great talking to you.
Yeah,
Carol Ann, I can just tell, like, within the first 8 seconds of talking to you that you're a hell of a lot of fun. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, thanks a lot. Give us a little closing piece, and I really look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yes. Visit CasanovaWasAWoman.com or on our Facebook page. You will laugh your butts off. It'll be a breath of fresh air to see some talent that is like even the extras, even the one-liners are hilarious. These people are top-notch. And in the industry today, it's just nice to see something that's really real about real people, real situations with a nice comedic twist. And it was a lot of fun playing a Brooklyn gal who gets to like let it rip in the middle of a restaurant with her temper. So it's not to be missed every second of that film, I promise you, not just because I'm in it.
All right. Well, thanks so much. It's really a blast to talk with you. And last, but certainly not least, well, maybe least, considering the rest of the cast and crew we got here. Peter, thanks again for jumping in. Thanks for helping me create. This is one of the most fun episodes I think I've ever done. So, Peter, you get the last word tonight.
I know, I'm always getting the last word. well, first of all, I want to thank everybody from the Casanova team, including my co-producer, Jez, who came on. You know, I'm excited about everybody to see all the movies that we've talked about tonight and our last couple of shows together. It's easy for me to say that the production company that I started 3 years ago has been a part of making each of these movies. And everybody can see everything about all these wonderful films, the awards they've won, their distribution, where you can rent them, where you can see them as they come out in the next several months and within the year. So you can go to my company's website, Indelible, I-N-D-E-L-I-B-L-E, Films, LLC.com. My website is full with all the information. All I can say is I invite everybody to check them all out. They're all unique and interesting and all have excellent messages to tell. And I'm excited for them to come to audiences. And, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a good end to 2016.
Awesome. Well, again, Casanova was a woman. Find them on Facebook.
Tyler.
Like them on Facebook. Share them. You can go to the website. And
yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, but Tyler is last name, just in case if anybody wants to check him out or interested in working with him. It's Weston. Cameron had said that there was a misspelling there. I want people to know.
Yep.
W-E-S-T-E-N. And you
yep.
can go to his website to see his stuff. Very talented young man.
Yep. Weston, westonmusic.com, W-S-T-E-N.
Yep.
And
thanks, guys.
All right. Well, again, thanks, everybody. You guys were so much fun. And absolutely congratulations. And I really get the feeling with the energy that just the small portion of you guys that you guys are bringing to this whole thing. I know you're going to be in a lot more festivals and get a lot more awards, and hopefully this thing's going to take off and you guys are going to have a great year. So, thanks again. And thank you for everybody for dialing into the Maverick Way Radio Hour, which is turned into the Maverick Way Radio Hour and a quarter. And again, happy birthday to our producer, Cameron Taddeo, who is actually 26 today, not 13, 14, or 48, or whatever I said earlier. Again, thanks, everybody. Thanks, listeners. Thanks, guests. And I welcome you all to come back and join us again. Take care.